Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast, Bills News with the UK twist. Robin, back from Singapore, is here joining me, Matt, and we may or may not have Mark on the show if he decides to answer his messages. But we are talking a win against the Bucks.
Yes. We're
talking... previewing the, what we call it, like the revenge game,
the return to the jungle.
Return to the jungle, yes, that's probably a better way to say it than return game. Against the Bengals.
DeMar Hamlin homecoming game, perhaps. gonna bring back a lot of memories.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a little bit later. And obviously what we're gonna do. Obviously, having a quick chat, but we're also going to talk about trade deadline because we made a trade and we made a couple of free agent signings. But I mean, before we start, how was your trip to Singapore? Obviously, you missed one live and watched one live in the game.
Yeah, so Singapore is 7 hours ahead of the UK on British summertime. Indonesia, even though actually it's east, southeast of Singapore, is an hour behind Singapore. So we flew east but went back an hour. So if you think you think putting the clocks back is confusing, and not to mention 1 p.m. kickoffs, 6 p.m. and Sunday. So the 1 p.m. game against the Patriots actually kicked off at 1 a.m. Monday morning, which would have been great because I was on holiday, but that was the day we flew to Indonesia. So we had to get up at 4 a.m. to get to the airport. So we didn't actually have to leave till about like 5:30. So I got up at 4 and then basically watched the game on like fast forward, which is probably the best way of seeing it because the parts I watched of it were bloody awful. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things people go, oh, I can't believe you lost to the 1-5 Patriots and that kind of thing. So I didn't play like a 1-5 team and we were pretty bad, but we still put up 25 points and our defense gave them 2 minutes and we couldn't stop Mac Jones. So, yeah, disappointing. So, yeah, anyway, time difference. So then the Thursday night game, which would be 8:15 US time, 1:15 UK time, was 8:15 in the morning of Friday morning. We didn't have to check out till midday. So I could literally sit in the hotel room and have a Friday breakfast game, which was fantastic. So I got to watch the whole thing all the way through. And right up until the beginning of the fourth quarter, I thought the Bills played really well. They played up tempo. They played no huddle. Kincaid came out. I've got a quick note I was going to mention on Gabe Davis. And really, apart from not being able to close it out, it was much more like the Bills we know and love.
Yeah. Well, at least with that, when you're talking about, obviously, Singapore, Indonesia being an hour behind, thank God you didn't go to, what was it, the two islands at just either side of the...
the international dateline.
Yeah. That would be fun, just going from one island to another.
Oh, luckily, God, yeah.
Luckily that didn't happen, but
yeah.
No, I mean, we did try and bug you a little bit during it, trying to do the get you on the shows, but obviously knowing when we record and what time it is there, we didn't think it was that happy.
Not terribly easy, I'm afraid, yeah. So yes, no, I had to bravely struggle through the 35 degrees. And sunshine and beautiful clean and tidy and safe Singapore where everyone speaks English, so it was hell.
And then come back
to 10 degrees if I'm lucky and non-stop.
Two storms,
yeah, straight back into the storm. I don't think I've barely seen the sun since I came back. We landed 6:30 a.m. Saturday morning. I think it's pretty much been bloody raining.
So everyone blame Robin now for the bad weather we're having.
It's my fault. Although it was good when we get into Indonesia, they'd actually been in the middle of a drought and it actually started raining when it went. So yeah, I think we are the rain gods. So we actually brought a massive storm to Indonesia, which everyone was really grateful for because it hadn't rained there in ages. And people are less grateful at my powers.
But let's move on. I mean, we'll talk, obviously, we've got trade deadlines come and gone. Mm. I think everyone was pushing for Bean to make a move. People wanted Jalen Johnson. They wanted, obviously, a one tech linebacker, wide receiver, pretty much any position in the team to actually build the depth on there. They only made one, which obviously Russell Douglas of the Packers, sending a third but getting a fifth back. And that, for me, is good value. And also, we don't lose our picks. We had 10 picks to start with.
Yeah.
We have 10 picks after.
We had a third for Tremaine Edmonds, didn't we? So we've still got a third round pick. So, yes, he chucked in the free third. So, yeah, I you know, nice bit of business again.
I mean, was before this was it was even announced that Douglas was the trade pick, was there a specific position and specific player that you were thinking where you won what on the Johnson trade hype, or was there someone in particular you'd want him to to trade beforehand?
I didn't have a particular name in mind. I didn't really get too excited about Jalen Johnson because it seemed like the price was always going to be too high. And you kind of have to strike the balance because if you were getting Jalen Johnson, you are basically getting rid of Trey White. And I think even with Russell Douglas, you kind of wonder if Trey White's time is probably days are possibly numbered. And we all hate to talk about it because, you know, it's the heartbeat of the team and everything. But you've got to find that balance between getting, you know, your Josh Norman guy off the street, just a sort of practice squad guy just to fill in and just... You know, versus someone who's actually going to be like a CB1. So I didn't really have anyone. I think what they've actually done is actually something pretty clever, which is get a zone heavy, reliable, good attitude, hardworking, loud voice in the locker room guy, who not probably a future CB2, a kind of Dane Jackson upgrade kind of thing. Mm. And then maybe Trey comes back for another year. You've still got Benford. And doing that instead. So I actually think what they were quite canny. Because if I would have said our number one priority would be to try and get some kind of brick wall defensive tackle, just someone to just sit there and swallow up double teams on the defensive line, I would have said that was probably the biggest priority. Well, I mean, obviously, Milano is bad, losing Trey White is bad, but I think there's something about losing Daquan Jones and the run defense, given that those guys are on the field all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas cornerbacks aren't called for quite as often. They're on the field, but they're only called into action a lot less frequently than D linemen are. So, yeah, my biggest priority would have been, you know, an absolutely monstrous run stuffer of Marcel Darius type player, which we maybe possibly got, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah. I mean, with Russell and obviously the whole Trey White situation, I mean, even if they did go Johnson, I wouldn't necessarily see it being signaling the end of Trey's career. I mean, obviously, having all these injuries, obviously, is one of the main reasons why you think he's not going to be that number one again. He's not going to be that lockdown you need. So Johnson would have been a nice addition on there. But even with Douglas on there, I still think they'll find a way, even if he is third or fourth in the on the depth chart, I think they'll still keep Trey White. They've got enough room to manoeuvre his.
Oh, for one more year, sure. They'll certainly keep Trey for the 2024 season. But I think he's probably gone after that season. I don't think you'd go after this season. They'll try and get him back, and then they'll see, I think, what value they have for him at the end of the 24.
I mean, you just look at the stats that Douglas comes with. I mean, since in the last three seasons, he's tied third with most interceptions with 10. Since week 5 of this season, the Bills' defense has 0 interceptions.
No, yeah, not one.
In the in those 10 interceptions over the last 3 years, in the same span, all the Bills cornerbacks combined, cornerbacks this is, have combined for a total of 12 interceptions.
Yeah, not great, Jim.
No, and it's just interesting to see how it goes with it. I mean, at the moment he's got, this year he's ranked 21st out of 129 cornerbacks in PFF with a 75.2% grade. His stats since 2022, and this is ranked out of 189, he's 26th in points against, or PSR, RTG. I don't know what sometimes these guys actually put on there.
The last one is rating, isn't it?
Okay.
RTG is probably rating. PSR. Well, we could have a quiz on that.
If anyone listening knows what PSR stands for, then obviously let us know. But that, he's ranked 26th in that category with 59.5.
Okay. Where one is good and 132 is Kyrie Elam.
Yeah.
Okay, got you. Right. Okay. Well, all right. So 26 have more than 100 is you're in the, as the maths people say, in the 80th percentile. Then he's in the top.
I think that might. Hold on. I think it might be like passer rating.
Oh, passer rating. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So or yards, one of those two. But obviously you've got that. You've got yards per cover and snap. He's ranked 15th. He's literally ranked in most categories in the top 30 on there. And you've got a guy which he can make the plays. I've seen videos where you get all the cover one guys actually just going into his game and all that. And if anyone's not following the cover one guys, just give them a follow, yeah, because they break it down. The fact that he's a smart guy. I mean, most of the Packers fans that you see actually are devastated. Yeah.
They've gutted, gone. They?
There's players that are devastated he's gone, and it shows that he is that good player. And I think there was one player I saw that he was in man coverage. Actually, I'm looking up someone. I'll find the video and actually put it on the Twitter. But at the last moment, he still got his head on a swivel.
Mm.
So whilst the guy he was actually doing was actually locked up, he had a swivel and actually went back about 20, 30 yards to actually intercept an unthrown ball. So you've got that, and he's only 28 as well. So
yeah,
he's the best couple of years still to come. We're going for dirt cheap.
Yeah.
This year, next year, I think it's 9 million, but Bean will probably do some magic on there.
That's not that bad when you think that top draw cornerbacks is 15 million plus, isn't it? It's sort of 15 to 20, isn't it? So 9 million ain't half bad for a if he's a more than adequate CB2.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good money.
And you've got Benford, who again has carried on where he has left last year, and actually you could almost say he's becoming, is now with Trey White out before Douglas came in, was CB1.
Yeah.
And that's obviously testament to a sixth round pick from Villanova.
Yeah.
Actually coming out, and we'll talk about it in the Bucks game, how he actually managed to shackle Evans.
Yeah.
But you've set up well for the rest of the season. Especially when we've got Bengals and a few pass heavy teams coming up.
Yeah, Dolphins, Chiefs, as Eagles, well. Cowboys, Dolphins again. Yeah.
But it's interesting. And the funniest thing I saw was obviously the team injury report. Did you see that?
Oh, today's?
No, on the Wednesday.
Yesterday's. I only just got here.
Yeah. That just made me, made me laugh about it. But it's what he's actually said in his press conferences. I think he turned out and said, "What do you know about the Bills?" He goes, "Or the Bills Mafia, they're crazy fans. They'll throw snowballs at the refs in the field." And he's coming in to play and actually and make that impact straight away. And Yeah, this is his quote. There we go. They got crazy fans. They throw snowballs at refs and players on the field. They're a winning team, but haven't finished. Going back in history when they've lost four in a row. And it was interesting. I was reading also that when he got traded from Green Bay, they told him he actually put the phone down because he didn't believe him.
Wow.
He got a call from the GM saying, "Yeah, we've traded you to Buffalo." He goes, "No, you haven't," and put the phone down.
Yeah.
And then I guess he found out on them online, or someone, or his agent probably said to him, "Yeah, they're not telling they're telling the truth." But it's going to be an interesting signing, and the next one we're going to go on to happen today.
Yes.
And it's as most people say, a big fatty.
Yeah.
Joined the team in Linville John. Not Johnson.
Linville Joseph.
Joseph, that's the one.
Social media team had a good laugh with that and then absolutely ballsed up the spelling of his name and then quickly deleted the tweet and then put it back again. But, Greg Thompson, our friend at Cuffer One again.
Yeah.
6 foot four, 330 pounds, mountain of a human, was once considered at one point the strongest man in the NFL.
Yeah.
And as he put it, you need 15 to 20 snaps a game of him not being moved a goddamn inch.
Yeah. And
fine, because if he swallows up a couple of linemen, a couple of blocks, that leaves Ed Oliver free, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's
put him there.
It's the fact that obviously he's not played all season this season. Yeah. Even just doing what he's actually doing, just being there as a run clogger, is you don't really need to know all the ins and outs, the schemes. So all you just got to do is just go, just block him. Don't let him go.
Yeah, see those couple of lads in front of you? Just try and get past them and keep them busy.
The interesting thing was sort of Sean McDermott's presser said about it, said, "Oh yeah, we were talking to him for a while. And what really sealed the deal was we saw him squat 600 pounds.
Yeah.
And when you've got something like that, you're going, yeah, you get him on that team. And
that's kind of what they need at this point without Daquan Jones. They could just do with something right in that middle just to that. He's a zero tech. You don't see many of those these days, do you?
No.
He's a zero tech. So he's straight on the center, isn't he?
Yeah. So it's good because then he'll take up the lane. I mean, Puna Ford, I had high hopes for him when he came in.
Yeah.
But that kind of went down the way, and obviously Daquan Jones.
It's like he had three or four good games in him, and then he's just sort of fell away, a bit like the Latavius Murray. Had like three or four really good games, and then it just sort of kept age quiet with him, perhaps.
And the fact that obviously Jones is the biggest loss on that on this defense. Well, everyone argues that it's Matt Milano that's the biggest miss on there, which I kind of agree. But if you had to say out of both of them, I would actually say Daquan Jones is probably more important to his defense than Matt Milano.
His loss, I think, is probably more keenly felt than Matt Milano's. I get absolutely there's an argument that says Matt Milano is not only one of the most important players on the Bills defense, one of the best linebackers in the NFL.
Yeah.
And yet there is something about Daquan Jones not being there that has affected the defense more deeply and more. The impact has been felt much more severely by Daquan Jones not being there, and I think that was the most urgent. Now maybe it helps that we had Terrell Bernard and we've got some other linebackers, perhaps not quite as effective. But yeah, I love the D line.
I love the what do you call it, the rumor they were going to get Ndamukong Suh. But I think yeah, I mean, I'll still take him.
A couple of games to warm up and bring him back for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, there were some good players out there, but they took their chance on them. For that, to get him on the roster, they obviously put Elam on IR.
Yeah.
They say he was struggling with an ankle injury. Maybe that had been playing him up in games, or he actually was looking a bit lost, but it depends on what type of IR they put him on. If they put him on a shutdown season one, then at least that gives them time to recover and actually learn a little bit more. If it's a four-game one, then obviously it'll still be in there and still be there as a camp, as a body towards the end. But I think me and Mark discussed it in the last show that obviously with all the swearing that happened in that, mainly by Mark. That is Elam a bust? Some say yes. I'm still saying no.
Not yet. I will come halfway and I say I don't think, and I've probably said this before, I don't think you can completely declare someone a bust. You have to give them 3 years. And I think that's probably true of lots of things, actually. I think the same thing of football managers and head coaches and almost anything, really. You have to give someone a proper crack of the whip. I think they may as well actually put him on season-ending IR because I just don't think he can come back. I think his confidence is probably shot. I think if his ankle is bad, then he just needs to get fit, get healthy, go back to his notes, have a good off-season, have OTAs, have a good training camp and try and reset and forget about it and try and come back in a year three and have a year three. It cannot be beyond the wit of coaches and players for someone who was graded as a first rounder. The game and the production is there somewhere. We've just got to figure it out. It's not completely beyond the realms of possibility that he can come back in year three and be decent. So some guys don't get it. I'm sure I read some. I'm sure Joe Marino said this. Maybe someone else said this as well. Isn't he 18 months younger than Dalton Kincaid? Someone was saying. I'm sure it was that.
Yeah.
You think that, okay, a year from now, not saying he's like Dalton Kincaid, but a year from now, he'll probably be at the point where, and if you think like, because Rousseau joined us at 22, and again, was promising, but not quite.
Oh, Rousseau's
probably 24 now, isn't he? So a year from now, you know, Rousseau's really got good. So is Epinesa. Maybe he's got that. It also sounds like another team wasn't desperate to come in for him. He's still a low-cost option.
Yeah,
I think you may as well just keep him on the roster, see what he can do in training camp of next year, and just say okay, maybe it's not going to be your year this year, but maybe next year will.
And then the last one we had is playoff Lenny.
Yes,
big Fortunate. Only on the practice squad, but yeah, I don't see him being on that for too long. On there, obviously, initially they thought he was coming in for a visit, but they managed to keep hold of Ty Johnson and they valued him. That's why they didn't sign Fortunate, but now they've signed him. And I think one of his first pitches he actually had was him in pretty much very, very tight shorts.
Yes, reference to Penguins.
Short-sleeved jersey, no gloves or anything like that. And then he puts obviously an Instagram, a Twitter or Instagram post saying, "It's fucking freezing."
Yeah. I've been to Buffalo in November as well, and I'm not kidding. It is. It ain't after. And I'm not someone who really feels the cold either. Like I'm the last person to put the heating on in winter and that kind of thing. Like I put a jumper on to go outside, kind of thing. I don't put a coat on. I had jumper, gloves, big thick coat, hat, and I was absolutely frozen to the marrow in Buffalo. It's bloody cold out there.
Yeah.
So, yes, I do sympathize. And he's a southern guy as well, so he's going to be used to the sunshine. He's not Minnesota or a cold weather guy.
But I think I think it's going to be an interesting signing. I mean, I can see him eventually being elevated full time onto the roster. Sure. I'm just wondering, is it a case that, as you mentioned just previously, is Murray just receding a little bit? He's not getting the yardage they want, which Fortunate can get. And also, Lenny's actually a good check down.
Yeah, he's a good check down catch.
And we know that Dorsey and Allen now want to do the check downs and actually play the short game. And maybe it's a case Johnson actually then goes back to the practice squad. Lenny comes onto it and maybe becomes the RB2.
Yeah.
To Cook being RB1.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And there's there's no harm in having playoff experience as well. Having so we all laugh at playoff Lenny. Kind of might be a useful guy to have around. He might only need to get you a couple of catches. It might make all the difference.
Yeah.
You know, finding receivers who can get open might well be the difference between the Bills going a long way and not going anywhere. So I think it could be quite a canny move. And at the very least, it's good depth and it's a good guy to have around. So I don't think there's a downside.
So let's move on then. So it was over a week ago that we faced the Bucks.
Yeah.
And I think most of us actually said that, well, I don't think most of us did. I said that it could be a more of a make or break type game, because if you didn't win it, you're 4-4, you're potentially two and a half games back from Miami.
Yeah.
And it could cause a few issues even just trying to get into the playoffs. But they turned it around. They actually they won 24-18, 5-3.
Yeah.
Got a tough game coming up on Sunday in Germany against the Chiefs. Struggled a bit in their last game against the Panthers, nonetheless. Obviously they won out. But I mean, what stood out in that game, in the Bucks game, that actually makes you think, yes, they're coming back. They've made the adjustment. They look like the team of the first few weeks.
Couple of things. They finally managed to, well, I suppose starting at the beginning, they played a lot more no huddle.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't give the defense, and spoiler prediction for the Bengals, I think they need to do that against the Bengals as well. Don't give them get on the front foot. Try and win it rather than not lose it. So they played no huddle. I don't have the percentage in front of me, but they were obviously they can't really play quite so much 12 personnel anymore. So they went back to 11 personnel, but they threw in a bit of 10 personnel, which was really interesting. So they started playing with the formations. Dorsey, you know, like we as we said, will get locked into doing certain sort of plays at certain sort of times, but he kind of got out of that. And which was great, because you got to see the emergence of Khalil Shakir, 92 yards, mm-hmm. 6 catches. You got Davis, you got Diggs, and then you got Kincaid, 5 for 65. So you got 4 receivers there. You know, we're always saying, you know, you look at the Bengals, now jealous we get about the Bengals with like 3-4, you know, really good receivers. It almost seemed like they found their true plan B. If their plan A is now going to be 12 personnel, they seem to be getting like an 11 personnel with a bit of 10 and a no huddle, 4 different receivers seem to be like the alternative until they're waiting for Dawson Knox to come back. One last thing I'll say again, I think it's a cover one guy called Jacob Gibbs, so all credit to him. About what they did with Gabe Davis in week 8 that was actually different that they haven't really done before. He points out against the Bucks, Gabe Davis, the average route depth against the Bucks was 7.2 yards. Gabe Davis had never had a route depth lower than 8.5 yards in a full game. 39% first read target, was 8th overall on the week, 6.7 yard average depth of target as well, and tied Jamar Chase with the most open or wide open targets, according to Fantasy Points data. Now, whether that's a one game and, sorry, they go back to Davis only getting 2 catches again, I don't know. But I hope they might have figured out how to use Gabe Davis.
Yeah.
So that's what I saw. And I saw a lot of things that I actually liked in that Tampa Bay game. They seemed to be calm. Josh seemed to be in control. He wasn't trying to win it all. They seem to be taking it seriously.
Yeah, I think
you know what I mean. they weren't arsing about, they weren't trying to win it all. And I think if they can do that, they seem to be getting that balance like they had against the Dolphins and Washington. And that made me feel pretty positive.
I think the no huddle aspect is something that really is good. And with this Bengals team, we'll talk about it, it's going to probably be important. But it seems like they've actually gone back to what was successful. Last year, their comfort was the 1-1 personnel. Yes, obviously, they want to do more 12 personnel because of you got one up-and-coming tight end and another tight end who is serviceable.
Yeah.
But doing 1v1, what 11 personnel, this is something that actually did open my eyes to it. Used it. They actually, it all revolved around four specific players, which was Davis, Diggs, Shakir, and Kincaid. But the interesting thing is, whilst they were in the 1-1 personnel, when they rotated between Cook and Murray, they averaged 7 yards per play and nearly an 8 yard average in all first down attempts. On first down.
Yeah.
And we all know that first downs, if you can stay ahead of the chains, is the best way to do it. And you're just looking at how that 1-1 personnel sorted. But Shakir, six catches, 92 yards, 15.3 yards per catch average. Gabe Davis, 9 for 87 yards. And a touchdown. Stephon Diggs, 9 for 70. Dalton Kincaid, 5 for 65. So spreading it out using that core.
Yeah.
I mean, they were the only, them and obviously Cook and Murray, one each. They were the only guys that were targeted and actually and thrown to, well, they were thrown to and made the reception that whole game. Sherfield was used for 31%. Of the snaps. Deontay Harty was 9% of it. But you can see that going back to what they loved and what they had success with last year, being the 1-1 personnel, is probably the identity that they need to take going forward. And if they can put in this the no huddle offense, I think that will make it dangerous. Obviously, the interception Allen threw was a tip.
I wouldn't put too much on that.
But the fact that he was 31 for 40 for 324 yards, two touchdowns, shows that he actually has it suits him. They found the situation, they found the personnel really that actually suits Josh Allen's game.
Yeah.
And even then, obviously, the only thing I hate about the offense at the moment is still these draw plays on second and longs, these draw plays out shotgun and all that, because that's just not getting you. That's not getting you the major yards that you need. But that's, as Mark would say, fuck Ken Dorsey. I think he made that quite clear on the last show, but.
Yeah.
That'd be my only downside to this offense, is that we've got a good running game. We've got a running back number one in Cook who, give him chance, will explode. And we've got an offensive line that...
It's got better, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's opening up.
It's not half bad now. It's not brilliant, but it's good enough.
Yeah, they're opening up holes. And... I've got here the PFF grades for the 2022 O-line versus the 2023 O-line. Obviously, you take out Sam Osiris Torrance, because it wasn't last year, but in 2022, Dawkins' PFF grade was 73.5.
Yeah.
Now 76.2.
Mm-hmm,
Roger Saffold was 43.7.
Yeah.
McGovern is 58.4. Mitch Morse was 61.4 in 2022, is now 6, which is, this is ironic, which is 66.6.
Okay, nice.
This one, obviously, Ryan Bates was 61.8, and at the moment, Torrance is 60.5.
Okay.
But this biggest shock on there,
yeah,
Spencer Brown.
Yeah.
His grade in 2022, 51.4.
Yeah.
What do you think it is so far in 2023?
I think he had a pretty bad game against the Jets. I think he's actually been pretty good since then. So I'm going to say high 60s, 60, 67.
70.
Oh, good lad.
And this is what, obviously, everyone was saying, yeah, we need a right tackle. We need a right tackle. Maybe we still do need a right tackle to give him to keep that push going for him. But you just kind of think of how he's done. I think he's played most. Him and Torrance have played pretty much most of the snaps on there. And this offensive line has only given up, how many sacks was it? He's only been sacked 12 times. In 8 games so far.
Yeah.
And Allen, in the same, let's go, this marked improvement over 2022, Allen was sacked 33 times in the regular series, in this regular season.
Yeah. So it's about
two the games. Whole season, he was sacked 33 times. In the first 8 games, he's only sacked 12 times.
Yeah. Number of, it'd be interesting. Do you have the number of pressures and the number of, like hits? I get the feeling that's a lot lower
this year. Yeah, the pressure's in there. Let me I'll probably get it up whilst we're actually talking on that. But it's what we see. We were talking about this O line. Will it stuck up and all that? And it looks like it has.
Yeah,
because you're looking at this team and you're looking and Aaron Cromer's finally had an off-season. He's got players that he wants and all that, and he can actually get a good, decent decent team. And I keep calling him O'Torrance. I know.
Yeah, I do as well. Osiris, it doesn't seem to work. O'Torrance seems to be flowing.
Yeah.
Osiris, doesn't it?
But you just look at it and you see how he's improved. I mean, he's not given up much in the way of sacks. I think he's given up one sack, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
On there, but not enough pressures. Here we go. Blocking. Here we go. That's the one. Good old PFF. So sacks. Yeah, he's given up one sack, one hurry or one hit, 12 hurries. And what's EEF? Pass blocking efficiency, but he's not done that much. He's not put a foot wrong, really. And you've got Mitch Morse, he's given up 14 hurries, 2 hits, 1 sack. Deion Dawkins, 1 sack, 3 hits, 10 hurries. Connor McGovern, 1 sack, no hit, 8 hurries. Spencer Brown, 1 sack, 3 hits, 12 hurries.
Okay.
So that's actually lies. That thing actually lies. He's only been sacked 5 times.
Yeah.
Every single one of that.
You usually have to assign a sack to an O-lineman, don't you? You can't kind of have a sack.
Yeah.
Unless he gets flushed or something, he was tackled negatively, maybe. That would have happened 7 times.
Each one of the starting linemen give up a sack, but the fact that the hurries and all that for a guy who's been told to stay in the pocket a lot more is actually great to see for this offensive line. And I think it has helped us. Okay, the performances haven't been the best, but we've kept Josh relatively healthy. And being able to actually get a run game of such going.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kudos to him, to Cromer on there. It's just interesting to see. And everyone came in saying the O-line is going to be the worst, but the O-line's turned out to be one of the best.
One of the unsung heroes, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they'll get a bit of a workout this Sunday. See if we're still saying the same thing.
I mean, the one thing obviously we haven't talked about yet is obviously the defense, and I think they did well. They've done well, and this is where Benford comes into it at stifling this offense. I mean, their highest receiving receiver was Rashad White, the running back, with 70 yards on 7 receptions. Chris Godwin was 5 receptions, 54 yards and 1 touchdown. And Mike Evans was only held to 3 catches for 39 yards. Obviously got the touchdown.
Yeah.
But this is where I think in my, obviously Benford's come in and actually played a huge role in that. But also in my players to watch, I had Dane Jackson. And both of them combined, because they don't have each one following the specific guy. I think they have their own side of the field. They're actually lock, but when they've come on, they've actually managed to shackle Mike Evans that much that they've actually they've been able to do it. They've been able to actually suffocate this team and actually put them in a very good position. We've outscored them on passing yards and rushing yards. And hopefully this Joseph signing actually helps us beef up that run game some more. Because Settle has his moments, but he's no Daquan Jones.
No. And also might help with the pass rush as well.
And the interesting thing I was reading somewhere, where was I reading, was this defense. I mean, we were talking about, obviously, the linebacker position being the worst. Or being probably more scrutinized now.
Yeah.
But if I don't know if people did notice on there, they gave Dawson the start, but he didn't play pretty much loads of snaps. They took him out quite a bit, and actually they went with a 3 safety look. And had Jordan.
They were bringing Poyer forward, wasn't it? So Poyer was like playing as the sort of
the big nickel type player.
Yes, the sort of insurgent linebacker type thing with Taylor Rapp on the field as well, weren't they?
And that seemed to confuse the hell out of the Bucks. And I think that's one way to mask this the effect of not having Milano. You've got him and Rapp, who can play that box safety, get down that line, and actually hit. And if you get both of those on there with Micah Hyde, you don't know which one's going to come for you. So your blocking scheme as an offensive lineman is going to be all over the place. And that's a good thing. And that's what I think we gave. We kind of thought, is it going to be a pain for McDermott? Is defense going to be regressing with McDermott doing both the head coaching and the defensive coordinator role? But we're still decent enough in the defensive, and we're a bit more aggressive than we have been. Yeah. The only thing I actually have a go at McDermott for is on a couple of times, knowing how good this defense was on the couple of fourth and shorts, why they didn't run it and didn't go for it rather than actually punt it away.
But,
see. I mean, it's interesting to see, and it's interesting to see how they actually how they play going forward with say Joseph on there. I mean, you've got Russo, who's actually getting there. AJ Epinesa is having a monster season. Yeah. Obviously, Leonard Floyd didn't generate enough stats wise, but you've got him. You've got Russo. You've got Von Miller, who they're still bleeding in. let's call it that.
I mean, if he's good by postseason, then that's the main thing. But it would be nice if he makes a splash on Sunday.
Yeah, but it's good to see that we've got these options available, and that three safety look, they utilized it for about 35% of all the defensive plays. So it's a good way to confuse the offensive linemen. So there's a lot of good things on there. And I said in the preview show, Mayfield's not the worst quarterback. He is a borderline QB1.
Yeah.
Or QB2, but can go on QB1. And he had a few different, he has obviously a couple of decent receivers in Godwin, Evans, and Cade Otton. And we've managed to hold him down. So.
Yeah, I mean, it goes 10 points really until late on in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, just needed to either get off the field on those repeated fourth downs without the penalty, especially the ridiculous face mask.
Yeah. I think that's really it. I mean, let's say there are a few stupid decisions. Penalties cost us on a couple of drives as well. I think on the touchdown drive and towards the end of the game, it actually did hold us, keep us in check and keep us on the edge of our seat. I think most people were probably screaming and had pulled the all the flags.
Starting to get a bit nervous, yeah, near the
end. Yeah, but I think what we've actually done, and we'll just go quickly on before we preview the Bengals. Obviously, I had Dane Jackson as my player to watch on defense. Had Shakir on offense.
Oh, marvelous!
And now we're seeing the real Shakir, and they're getting involved a lot more. I think he is now becoming wide receiver 3 in this team.
Yeah.
And actually being able to trust Josh a lot more, because there were a few catches that he made in that game which were just beautiful.
Absolutely gorgeous, weren't they? Yeah.
And I think Mark had Tyrell Dodson as his defensive player.
Yeah.
Which wasn't as good, but he still made 4 tackles, 1 assisted. But he had Dalton Kincaid. He finally went back and chose Kincaid as his offensive player. And obviously 65 yards, his first touchdown on there. And it's an interesting stat that I've got. Obviously Greg Thompson, great guy on there.
Yes.
Using the first 7 games, so all the games up so far into his career, in a 17-game season, he's on pace for 83 targets, 73 catches, 627 yards, 3 touchdowns, an 88.2% catch rate, 0 drops, 27 first downs, and 17 missed tackles.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And when we were talking about it with the tight end record for a rookie for the Bills, that would easily put him top. He would break the rookie season record with that projection.
Yeah.
And you just see how he's actually getting more reliable. You can see why they loved him coming out of it, and they made up to get him. The fact that he hasn't dropped a ball yet. When he catches it, he's actually fighting for those yards and becoming, in my opinion, already overtaken Dawson Knox.
I think he almost has, hasn't he? And he's become the next receiver as well. Mm. So you've got Josh Allen looking like he's getting 4 targets now. If they can keep Davis doing what he's doing, keep Shakir doing what he's doing, you've still got Diggs. If you can get Kincaid in, and when Dawson Knox comes back, even if he's blocking and doing that, that still gives you that other option as well. So,
it's definitely going to be an interesting one. And let's move on, because we're actually we've been talking for so long, and Darn to go.
I'm sorry, eyes are starting to go. Yes, Bengals game Sunday night.
What's your initial, before we go into it, what's your initial thoughts on that game? Is it going to be, do you think it's going to be close? Do you think it's going to be hard? Are you going to see a repeat of last season?
And yes, all three of those things. I think it is going to be close. I think it's interesting that McDermott is now the defensive coordinator. I don't know how much of a factor losing that badly at home in the playoffs, 28-10, could easily have been 42-10. We were just hopeless in the game. That would have absolutely hurt McDermott. There were things in that game where the Bengals just ran all over us and we couldn't do anything to stop them. Now, whether that was the game plan or the execution or the calls, we don't know. But you got to think that McDermott will draw something up to slow the Bengals down. He'll have looked at that film. He'd have looked at where the Bengals are strong and where they hurt us. And there's one in particular that I'll mention in a second. I think McDermott will do enough in the defense, even with our injuries, that will slow them down. And I think it's then on Josh Allen and the offense and those receivers to march down the field enough times. I think a lot of people are predicting a kind of 35-31 type game. I think it'll actually be lower scored than that. I think it'll be closer to the Chiefs game of last year. I think it'll be more like a 20s game, not in a bad way, but I think it'll still be a very close, very exciting game. I'm not seeing a shootout. Bills are underdogs, are the less fancied team for the first time since
2021,
since the Chiefs playoff game, the 13 seconds game. Which meant we were never underdogs through the entirety of the 2022 season.
Yeah. Which it was 21 games, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah. It really says something, doesn't it? I think we have a much better pass rush than we did when we faced the Bengals last time. I think we have Kincaid now. I think our offensive line is better. No, we haven't had the results. I know you're probably facing the Bengals at a bad time because they look to be good now.
Yeah.
But sometimes their run needs to come to an end. And I know I'm talking myself into it, but I think it'd be a lot closer than people think. I think a lot of people think, the Bengals will just sort of knock us over and they'll win by 10. If they do, then I think we have a lot of problems because we're not really a playoff team if we lose comfortably. We're a wild card team.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they started off 1-3. They've won three straight on there.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at their losses against the Browns. Decent, a good team. They've actually got a winning record at the moment. Yeah. Ravens, they've got a winning record at the moment. Rams haven't. Titans, they lost, but they beat the Rams. They lost to the Titans, who don't have a winning record.
Yeah.
They beat the Cardinals, who don't have winning records, and just beat the Seahawks, who have a winning record, and beat the 49ers, who had a winning record. So it's hard to gauge. Unlike Miami, who they've only beaten one team with a winning record. There is stuff that scares me with this Cincinnati team. I mean,
you can't
rule anything out on there. Obviously, Joe Burrow actually had that injury, but started to actually play a lot better in the second half.
Yeah, I think he's probably season. Over it as well. I think you've got back to full strength.
Yeah, and then you've still got obviously Jamar Chase and T. Higgins are still there and thereabouts, but they've got a little bit more depth all sides as well.
Yeah.
I think, obviously they've got Jamar Chase, their top yardage guy with 656 yards. Then Tyler Boyd with 218 for T. Higgins. So even though they haven't used him that much, most of those have come within the last few weeks. And obviously a healthier Joe Burrow is a dangerous Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
But the things that give me a bit of hope, and there is bits of hope on there, is this offensive line. and even the running back situation, because they only use Joe Mixon. He only gets 4 yards per attempt, and done for 112 attempts, only rushed for 453 yards. Longest was 22. Okay, he's had 11 10 plus runs, but after that, their next highest is Joe Burrow with 57 yards.
Yeah, that's not good.
So, and then the other thing that fills me a bit more confident is sort of the offensive line. They use pretty much the same five all the way through. I think there's an injury issue now with Orlando Brown, but they've given up, 6, 11, 13 sacks this season, especially Jonah Williams. Is he right guard? Yeah, so mainly on that right side. On the right side with Karras in the centre, Bolson and Jonah Williams, they've given up 11 sacks between them. And if Joseph is ready to go, I can see a big game from Ed Oliver. I can see them potentially put Floyd on that side.
Yeah.
And Miller's not there, and actually getting a lot more pressure on this defense. And if Burrow's still struggling with his calf, then yeah, there is a chance that we can force a few more incompletions, a few more errors, and get them off the field.
Yeah, he's a quick release guy, though, isn't he, Burrow? He's similar to Tua, isn't he? They get rid of it quick. You've got to try and put him off, try and put off the timing. And if our pass rushers are there, if we can just block that line, get Rousseau in, get Floyd. If they can put Burrow off, then I think it gives you a chance. I think if we can get out to a lead as well, which I think we're circling back to no huddle and getting on the front foot. I think when the Bills get that ball first, going downfield, go no huddle, go up tempo, try and get a quick score, try and put the pressure back onto Burrow, because you know that if they're coming out to throw, then that gives the pass rusher something to aim for, gives them a target. They are. I mean, like anyone, the Bills haven't been good enough. But the way, I mean, look, the Miami Dolphins put 70 points up on the Denver Broncos the week before we beat them, scoring 48 points. And the team they put 70 points up on beat the Chiefs by 2 scores, the Denver Broncos, last week. It's a crazy league, and in this year in particular. There's no one the Bills can't beat, including the Bengals, including the Eagles. I'm still seeing the Eagles slightly laboring, slightly. There's no one that I'm seeing that can't, that are absolutely out of reach. If the Bills play their game and they have the right game plan and they execute it, they'll push anyone close. And that's what I'm hanging on to. If you can just get on that front foot, go downfield, make your completions, take what the defense gives you, get a bit of Josh Allen magic, and then get your pass rush and get your good coverage.
Yeah.
We can beat them, even in Cincinnati. They're not, you know, they're not so out of reach. They're a good team, but like anyone, they can get beat.
Yeah, I think looking at it, I mean, they're where it's going to be won, I keep saying it, is going to be in the trenches again. I mean, obviously, Trey Hendrickson is a really good defensive end. Sam Hubbard is actually good. Those two have got 9 and 4 sacks, respectively. Sam Hubbard likes to hit more than Trey Hendrickson on quarterback hits. Hendrickson is going to hurry more than some Sam Hubbard on there. But that's where it's going to be. There's going to be really one, to be honest. This team don't like to turn, don't force that many turnovers. I think, what was it? Oh, no, they do. 6, 9, 10 turnovers.
In the first few games, they were all, Burrow was all over the place.
And even defense-wise, they're not their linebacker. Logan Wilson's got the majority of their, we've got 3 interceptions. Dax Hill, Cam Taylor-Britt, both with 2, and then Jermaine Pratt with 2, and then 1 for Mike Hilton, a safety. So only Cam Taylor-Britt has really given the issue on defense with regards to coverage. So there are ways, and if we play the no huddle quick games and actually give the Bengals time to actually to rest, that's going to be the key. In my opinion, that's the key to this game, playing the offense that we played against the Bucks. So 1-1, get the four key guys, mix it up a bit, so don't always have the same four guys, but obviously the targets were four guys. They used to say they used Sherfield, Harty, and Fem a fair bit. Get that mixed and matched up. Get back to playing how their offense worked last year. We've got a decent run game and now O-line that we can keep Josh protected and obviously open up the holes. And there's a formula there to win that game straight up.
Yeah. Okay, so who's your players to watch?
My players to watch on offense is Spencer Brown.
Spencer Brown, okay.
Because obviously what we've said, how he's improved his grades and how he's actually not given up many pressures and only one sack for a guy who actually struggled last year with it, more than likely going to be facing up against Hendrickson. If he can keep him quiet, even with Torrance's help, if you keep Josh upright and actually silence him. Is that the best word? Silence him? Keep him quiet.
Yeah, silence him. Yeah, no, that's
during the game, then that is a win for this offense and gives Josh a little bit more time. And defense, I'm going to pick Ed Oliver.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
If it is a case that he obviously lines up on the right side mainly. So he's going up against obviously Williams and Kappa and I can't remember the other guy I said, Karras, on the right side, and they're the ones that give up the most pressure. If Joseph goes and plays, even if it's the odd snaps, when he's in there, you look for Ed Oliver to get his name on that stat sheet, and this season he has done that, and I'm confident that these two players will really give us a bit more of a boost, and if they play their game well, then I can see a victory for the Bills.
Okay. So my offensive players to look forward to, actually very similar, was actually Osiris Torrance, because I have noticed that a few defenses going after him in the last couple of games. I think probably a bit like you. I wonder if that's the side of the line the defense are going to go for, because Dawkins seems to be playing really well. Morse is really playing really well. So I wonder if they're going to go for that side. And I think if those two can stand up against the pressure by Josh enough time, then I think that's going to be a key matchup. My defense is going to be Taron Johnson, because I remember they really picked on Taron Johnson in the playoff game last time. They ran, you know, the heavier guys against him, and he just doesn't, you know, he's just not that big a guy. Couldn't defend them. It's not so much actually Taron Johnson, because it wasn't his fault. That's just the way they schemed up against him, particularly in those running games. They just blocked him and he just wasn't able to cover it. It's what McDermott's going to do about that, how he's going to slow down the Burrow offense. So, those are my two to keep an eye on how Taron plays.
And are you going to make a prediction? You can give us a score or...
Yeah, no, I'm gonna make a score, and I've had this one in my mind for a while.
Go on, Em.
I'm going to say Bills 24, Bengals 21. I think Bills win. I just think they win.
Okay.
They go in and surprise. It's been that sort of year. I think the Bills are the underdog, and I think the underdog wins.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still thinking that Bills can come up. I think their performance against the Bucks has helped us quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's now shown how we play on the offense, and our defense against the Bucks offense, they're not too shabby. Yeah. Even with Mayfield, they managed to hold them quite well. I think they've may have found their identity. We always say identity. Yeah. They need to find their identity. Is this their identity? Is that their identity? The 1-1, no huddle, I think, is the way they've got to go. And I think buoyed by that, and obviously a rejuvenated D with the signing of Douglas, mm-hmm. Especially, I can see a win on this one. Just the score, I think it's going to be 24-21.
Oh, I said 24-21.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay, fuck's sake. Can I not say the same?
You can, but I mean, just out of, you know, just for the
fun. I'm going to go with 27-24.
That'll do. That works. But that's a few more field goals, isn't it? So
yeah, I mean, just it's going to be a close game. It's going to be a one score game anyway. So
yes.
we'll see what actually happens. And yeah, I think it's going to be a good game. It's obviously the Sunday night game, so an early and late one for us. So
yeah. It's going to be a hell of a lineup as well, isn't it?
Hey.
We've got Dolphins, Chiefs to begin with, then it's Ravens, Seahawks, and then it's Cowboys, yeah. Eagles. So, some seriously good games on Sunday. Should be good.
So, obviously, tonight is obviously Titans, Steelers, which
you can't win them all, can you? Sunday looks like a good program anyway.
But it is what it is. I mean, we'll look forward to it, and obviously, hopefully we'll be coming out of that 6-3. We're going to be on the same thing as the Dolphins, because I can't see the Dolphins beating the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs get them. Dolphins, they still can't win the big ones, can they?
No.
They can knock over the bad teams. And yeah. Good for them. But they're still yet to prove themselves against the really good teams.
So I think it's going to be. I think the Dolphins. I think we're going to be 6-3 with the Dolphins on there, with all to play for. And this game will give us the boost and give us the confidence, because we're going into a run of games where it's going to be harder. We're going to be facing better teams.
Yeah.
Over the next 3 weeks, 3-4 weeks, excluding the bye, and if we can get a mini run going, then that'll just bring the confidence up higher and higher.
Yeah. Now's the time to start taking it seriously, I think. We're into the second half now. Now's the time to, you know who you are now. So go out and win it.
Yeah. So that is the show for tonight. Obviously, follow us on all the socials. Please interact with us and all that. Obviously, follow all three of us on our own personal ones. Obviously, keep the likes, keep the sharing, keep the following going. And for Robin, my name's Matt. Thank you for listening. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.